The following episode of K-Voice was recorded at 12:25 a.m., October 17th, 2017. Things may have changed by the time you listen to this show. Enjoy the show.
From the age of 12, we were told that if boys pulled our hair or poked us with pencils, it meant that they liked us. But we didn't like it that much. We were 13 years old when we would walk down the street and had men look from our feet to our face, and we'd listen as they completely replaced our identity from human to object. As they said cringeworthy things to us, we wanted to run. We were frozen in place but continued walking fast-paced, turning on whatever sidewalk was closest just to get away, even if it didn't lead us in the way that we were originally going. Because Mama always said, if you see a strange man following you, you go to the other side of the street. And remember, if they ever grab you, scream. And that's something we had to learn at the age of 13 because we are just young fiends.
Hello. Thank you for listening to K-Voice of Resistance. That's the letter K, Voice of Resistance. I'm your host, Kelly.
Resist!
That was Kaylee Dixon, 14 years old, reading her poem, A Touch of Sexual Assault.
We were spanked by the boys at our school, but it was cool because it just meant we had nice bodies. And they rated our bodies on a scale from 1 to 10. And if you were a 10, you would learn to spend your days hearing whistles, purring, and damn girl. Because if you were a damn girl, then that meant you weren't a damn girl at all. You were just a toy label, do whatever you want to me, even though I don't agree. And we had to watch what we wore because if too much shoulder was showing, we had to change our clothing because it distracted the boys from their learning. So the only thing that we were learning were tips and tricks to tie up our shirt so that it didn't hang too low, because that would show the guys that we want it. Because wearing shorts and tank tops meant that we were flaunting it.
What a weekend. This episode is going to be a bit different, a little less about today's news, and a little more editorial. First, let's check in with the hard-working men and women, the fine, dedicated representatives of our great nation, the pillars of integrity that make up the House and our esteemed Senate. This week in Congress. The Senate convened on Monday to hold a confirmation vote on the nomination of Calista Gingrich to be ambassador to the Vatican.
This week, we nominate a Republican candidate for president who, for the last year, has given hope and encouragement to millions of Americans.
You suck!
Personally, I could give a crap who's the ambassador to the Vatican, but even the Pope didn't want her. So I've heard. On Tuesday, they had a confirmation vote on the nomination of David Trachtenberg, former Boeing executive, to be principal deputy under the Secretary of Defense. So what do we have here? Donald has tapped a top Boeing executive to serve as Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis's second in command. So not only does Donald likely have stock in Boeing, he said that he sold it, but who's going to believe that? But this guy is likely still devoted to seeing that his former company does well. Donald's administration did propose a budget for the 2018 fiscal year, and the Senate passed a $700 billion defense policy bill for 2018. This includes $13.5 billion to procure additional aircraft, missiles, and ships, including F-18 warplanes and Apache helicopters manufactured by none other than Boeing.
I smell a conflict of interest.
The Senate schedule for the rest of the week is yet to be announced. Now the House. The hard-working House will be putting their nose to the grindstone and pulling all-nighters, taking the week off. Members are home for a district quote-unquote work period. It will next convene on Monday, October 23rd. Okay.
So how many of you would have the courage to walk out and report it? Tell me.
We know violence and abuse of power still persist today. We've recently seen that in stark relief in the disgusting conduct and behavior of a very powerful figure in Hollywood.
That was the much missed, largely beloved Vice President Joe Biden.
The cardinal sin was for a man to use his power, physical or economic, to abuse a woman or a child. It's disgusting.
because of the bravery of so many courageous women in Hollywood speaking up, putting their careers at risk, because you know how it works, many of you. Even if the public believes it, they judge you as well. They judge you and ask themselves, which they have no right to, were you complicit in this anyway? Why didn't you have the courage to do something?
Two words. On Sunday, two words became a rallying cry for the victimized and the abused. It has been an intense few days. This past Friday's episode, I laid out in some detail when it was I met my Harvey Weinstein, so to speak. Something that brought back a lot of feelings. Especially because I didn't tell you the worst of it. And I won't. They say it is good to tell our stories, that holding them in gives them too much power over us. And it may be true. But I have one story that I have not learned how to tell. What I can say is, I do know that I have felt stirred up because of it all. Sexual assault is on the news, it's on Twitter, it's on Facebook, it is everywhere. Everywhere I turn, something is reminding me of some of my worst memories and striking the chords of foul feelings I'd rather ignore that I usually bury under sarcasm or politics fairly successfully. Really, though, so long as I throw my everything into politics, for example, morning, noon, and night, then I can blissfully ignore the scars of my life and the wounds. Healthy? No? Ah, well. Better than burying my life in a bottle of bourbon like I used to. Anyhow, on Sunday, Alyssa Milano started a kind of movement. At least I hope it sustains and transforms into something that can be called a movement. In the wake of the Weinstein wave, she tweeted, quote, "If you have been sexually harassed or assaulted, write me too as a reply to this tweet," unquote. Milano received Me Too responses from Will and Grace star Deborah Messing and Anna Paquin, the Oscar-winning actress from New Zealand, among numerous other stars, as well as 56,300 other replies. Milano says on her Twitter account that she got the idea from a friend, that a friend told her that such a tweet might give people a sense of the magnitude of the problem. In another tweet that links to a blog post, Milano wrote the following about Weinstein, quote, "While I am sickened and angered over the disturbing accusations of Weinstein's sexual predation and abuse of power, I'm happy, ecstatic even, that it has opened up a dialogue around the continued sexual harassment, objectification, and degradation of women." Unquote. Hashtag MeToo was the top trend nationwide on Twitter Sunday as scores of women and men replied to Milano's initial tweet. My feed was flooded with bold confessions of the most personal and painful kind. And even more powerful and upsetting was my Facebook feed. Two out of three posts was MeToo. Some included stories and some just words. Amazing, considering one of the chief emotions lodged in victims of sexual assault is shame. Unjustly, it is shame, often crippling shame. And shame rarely leaves room for bold proclamations such as, "Me too."
So when we were 16, we screamed because the men that followed us on the sidewalks finally caught up to us. We quietly said, "Please don't touch us there. We know we're asking for it by wearing these heels, but we just feel so uncomfortable, so stop." But that meant go. We said no, but that meant yes. So they grabbed us and unzipped our dress. They threw us down where our dignity sank lower than the ground. They hovered over us and we pleaded for them to stop. They got on top and you don't need to know the rest because we are some of the 68% of victims that will never tell a soul. So we'll just grab our dresses and go home. Take a few showers and try to get some sleep. In the morning, we will pick out the outfit that is most discreet because we want to make sure that no other man from the street thinks we look sweet enough to want a taste. We want to make sure we are as covered as possible so that our identities are not replaced with walking candy. And we will sit at the back of class where nobody will ask how our weekend was because if they ask, we might just burst into tears. And we will live in fear. We will run home so that we will never see the same men again that wait for us to be alone. We went from little boys poking us to men provoking us. We went from little boys pulling our ponytails to watching the trail of tears fall down our pillow every night because we knew once we fell asleep, we would see the men in our dreams, no sorry, nightmares, that caught up to us on the sidewalk that night and left us bare. We went from playing with our toys to being toys ourselves. So boys will be boys, and us women will never tell. Thank you.
I too posted. And I had one of my closest friends, a guy, comment on how men get sexually harassed too, and insulted as well. I felt confronted. It is a fact. It is a fact that I know well. I've had several male friends who have confided in me their most personal and devastating stories. Enough friends as to be shocking. It is not fair for men. There is more of a stigma against them.
Men can't be assaulted. They love it.
For a man to come out and tell his story, he is confronted with a whole host of unique challenges that women are not necessarily faced with. That being said, both men and women face the challenge of not being believed when they tell their stories.
So how many of you would have the courage to walk out and report it? Tell me. Well, I'd go home and get my shotgun. I'd come back and I'd do the... So why wouldn't you? Because of the cultural norm, you'd be ashamed. The society would judge you even after the fact if they knew even it wasn't your fault. But it still takes courage to speak out. With these women in Hollywood speaking out now, did it to save other women from similar abuse.
Here's some facts. According to the National Sexual Violence Resource Center, 1 in 5 women and 1 in 71 men will be raped at some point in their lifetimes. Interestingly, 46.4% of lesbians, 74.9% of bisexual women, and 43.3% of heterosexual women reported sexual violence other than rape during their lifetimes. Did you catch that? 74.9% of bisexual women reported sexual violence other than rape during their lifetimes. For men, 40.2% of gay men, 47.4% of bisexual men, next to 20.8% of heterosexual men reported sexual violence other than rape during their lifetimes. And according to the CDC, 46% of bisexual women have been raped. 46%! Compared with 17% of heterosexual women and 13% of lesbians. 26% of gay men and 37% of bisexual men experience rape, physical violence, or stalking by an intimate partner, compared with 29% of heterosexual men. And then, okay, well, this little bit has little to do with the point I'm coming around to, but it's fascinating. Each rape cost approximately $151,423 annually. Rape costs the U.S. more than any other crime, $127 billion, followed by assault at $93 billion, murder at $71 billion, and drunk driving at $61 billion. Of course, that's if the victim comes forward. So back to my Sunday. My friend was feeling left out. He had a point. The Me Too movement specifically called for women to come out. He said he gets frustrated with constantly hearing "you don't understand." The phrase "you don't understand" has always bothered me. The thing is, how do any of us know what another person does or does not understand? I was even more defensive now, as that is something that I would never say, and I didn't start the movement, and I didn't understand why he was taking his frustrations out on me. And then it hit me. I wasn't responding well to a friend who was simply reaching out for someone who would understand his feelings because I was being oversensitive. Which happens when you haven't dealt with your crap. And I have not. Years of therapy and my deepest wounds, I never had the courage to touch. So I made amends. I told my friend about a secret Facebook group for survivors of sexual assault I was in, if he wanted to join, kind of like a support group. These exist. If anyone wants some somewhat anonymous support for the bad days, just look around. There are groups that help. In no time, I saw men posting their Me Toos, and the message from women started to change and becoming more inclusive of men. I encouraged my friend to go ahead and post. I know how silly it sounds. Post Me Too on Facebook for the good of the country. But it's not silly. It's deadly serious. And those simple Me Toos are loaded with a world of pain, anger, and strength. I said to him, I think posting helps others. The more who come out, the more powerful the message. He told me a bit of his story, and it was hard to hear. These stories always are the hardest. He also admitted that he didn't feel up to posting, which is completely understandable. Girls in my secret Facebook group were posting about how overwhelming the flood of Me Toos has been, how it was almost too much, and for some it was too much. I know the feeling. I started to feel overwhelmed by it. And then those feelings shifted into a sense of awe at this many people, women and men, gathered the courage to come out and proclaim it. It's like the world seemed smaller and my disparate community bonded. It's almost like we, the victimized, grew 2 feet on Sunday, and we were staring down at those who would victimize as a unified army. And I don't know if it makes any sense, you guys. What I'm trying to say is, while I felt as though I had been emotionally drawn over hot coals, somewhere in all of this, I felt hope. Maybe things were going to change. Perhaps this will be a societal shift. Maybe, just maybe. If only we can sustain it, that is going to be the key. So to everyone who posted, me too, and to those who didn't but could, thank you. You are not alone. Thank you for your bravery, and thank you for helping me to grow 2 feet for a day. I do know that we have had some effect. A guy friend of mine wrote this on Facebook on Monday, the day after the campaign. Quote, I was profoundly struck yesterday when all over Facebook, women wrote, and by the way, are still writing, me too, in solidarity over the scourge of sexual harassment. Women I know, respect, and love. It breaks my heart. I'm also angry at myself for my ability to stick my head in the sand. I had the same very sad realization about rape a few years ago, and I can't believe I still don't get how bad it all is. I suppose it's one thing to know it's out there and happening to women every day, but it's another to see it in front of your face in black and white and be reminded. Of course, women will be hit on all the time, but these women that spoke out are drawing a very clear line between someone showing interest and someone asserting power over a woman because they can. I don't know what I can do about it, but at least I see the size of the problem clearer than I did. And maybe so do a lot of other people. That's not insignificant. Unquote. And it's hard to ask for more from someone. Simply, them knowing it happens goes a long way. So what are the barriers preventing people from getting justice? Workplace sexual harassment violates Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, as mentioned last episode. But that doesn't mean the law is on every person's side. If their employment contract includes an arbitration clause, they're likely to have signed away their right to a jury trial. My old job at Umami Burger, a gourmet burger joint in LA, had one of these after my boss propositioned me in the most crude manner and then fired me after I turned him down. My lawyer explained how this agreement complicates things. It's no surprise that many contracts include these clauses. They benefit employers. A 2011 Cornell University study found that employees are less likely to win arbitration cases than going to trial. And when employees do prevail, they're often prohibited from discussing the case. This veil of secrecy protects serial harassers by keeping other potential victims in the dark and minimizing pressure on companies to fire predators. Any company that is serious about addressing the problem, including the Weinstein Company, should waive the non-disclosure agreements for those who report sexual harassment so that they can tell their stories publicly. Also, it is a myth that people who report sexual harassment can find another job. Depending on the field, people are often blacklisted after making such a complaint, which explains why, according to the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, roughly 3 out of every 4 people who are harassed at work never report it. Reforming arbitration laws is key to stopping sexual harassment. In the coming year, what we need to do is to get bipartisan support for the Arbitration Fairness Act of 2017. Which would keep mandatory arbitration clauses out of employment contracts, giving harassed workers the choice to go to court. But Congress is slow, so we need an immediate change, a nationwide push to get companies to step up. Companies have a huge role. In a 2016 study published by Harvard Business Review, identified 3 factors that contribute to employees' reluctance to speak up when they witness sexual harassment. Fear of retaliation, the bystander effect, where we're less likely to come to the aid of victims when others are present, and a masculine culture that sees sexual harassment as acceptable. The authors proposed 4 solutions. Making employees aware of the problem so that they know what they're seeing. Tell employees that they're responsible for stepping in and helping. Increase employee accountability. And teach employees how to intervene. All of which could go a long way in curbing this kind of behavior. Companies can also encourage action by appointing an independent ombudsman, which is an official appointed to investigate individuals' complaints against maladministration, especially that of public authorities. Or authorizing people across the organization to hear complaints. Men, of course, are vitally important to this culture change. The more men hold their peers and bosses accountable, the faster we can stop this behavior. There's no more room for locker room talk. Let's work together and make Me Too into a movement that ignites a sea change in our culture. Let this be a bright spot in the dark blight that is the 4 years we are struggling under Republican control and under a predator president. Should anyone need help, please call the National Sexual Assault Hotline. They can also refer you to a local rape crisis center. The number is 1-800-656-HOPE. That's 1-800-656-4673. One more time, that's 1-800-656-HOPE. They're available 24/7. And real quick, before I move on, to every man or woman who is an ally, to everyone who, even without fully understanding the depth of what a person is going through, still stands by, supports in any way possible, and most importantly, says, I believe you, you are heroes. It means the world to a person who has suffered the indignity of abuse to simply be believed. So thank you. And one more thing. Many well-meaning people get this wrong, but should someone tell you that they have been assaulted or raped, simply say, I'm sorry, please let me know if I can do anything to help you. Do not try to fix it, don't ask detailed questions, and do not say,
I can't believe it, he seems like such a nice guy.
Nor should you ask, as my girlfriend did, first thing out of her mouth, was...
Were you drunk?
Again, don't pry for details. It's too easy to stumble into something that sounds like you're blaming the victim, or that you don't fully believe them. You can also ask, do you want to talk about it? And if not, if they don't, give them space. They'll talk about it when they're ready. Probably. Okay, let's talk about something more fun, shall we? There is a fabulous article in Forbes written by Margie Warrell called Fierce and Feminine, Mayor Carmen Yulín Cruz models leadership for women the world over. Mayor Cruz, who has been giving her president, the orange ruffian, hell for his perverse neglect of Puerto Rico in his time of need, well, she assumed the role of leadership and owns it like, well, she owns it like a man. There are many barriers that stand between women and leadership. These are societal barriers that keep women in the role of subordinate. And these systemic problems need to be addressed. But one of the greatest barriers between a woman and a position of leadership is her belief that she belongs in that position. The pervasive gender confidence gap. Personally, when handed a leadership role, I rock it. It even feels natural. But when it comes to pursuing a leadership role, I feel diminished and inferior.
I can't do that. I'm not a boss. Lead people, me?
The only other times I assume a leadership role is when there is a power vacuum and no one else steps up to fill the role. Then I'll step in and enjoy it, too. Most of the time, I just need someone to tell me that I can do it. I need their faith in me to serve as my own faith in myself. So back to Marge Warrell's piece. She says, quote, the truth is that for women to be the force for change the world today so desperately needs requires courage. Courage to confront the critics, to take on the power brokers. Courage to call out those who talk but resist change to the status quo. Courage to lay it all on the line, to risk falling short of our endeavors. Yet risk it we must. No matter what the problem, conflict, or crisis, the feminine leadership strengths, compassion, collaboration, peacemaking, bridge building are a vital part of the solution. More than ever, we need women to step up to the leadership plate wherever they find themselves, to call out inequity, to challenge the established order, to engage in dialogue, and hold up a mirror to those who have a vested interest in maintaining it. Unquote. She continues to list her prescription to this barrier of self that women face. This list also applies to men who may suffer from a confidence gap as well. I know you're out there. 1. Dare to be more ambitious than you think you have a right to be. Lao Tzu wrote, quote, people are capable of more than they think, unquote. When it comes to women, double it. 2. Own your value. We must embrace what makes us unique and sets us apart from the pack, rather than trying to minimize it or blend into the crowd. 3. Be nice, but not too nice. Quote, Women are natural bridge builders, strong at nurturing relationships and forging bonds. However, we can often be too nice for our own and others' good, and too reluctant to disrupt the bonds we've worked to create. Yet, as I've witnessed time and time again, when people tiptoe around sensitive issues, withhold our opinion, or worse, apologize for having one, we deprive others of the perspective we bring, and issues are left to fester. So don't let your fear of ruffling feathers keep you from speaking up and speaking out. If there's something you genuinely want to say, chances are someone genuinely needs to hear it. Unquote. 4. Advocate for yourself. A Harvard Business Review article, Women Don't Ask, I don't know, I'm all about the Harvard Business Review articles today. Women Don't Ask cited a study which showed that the starting salaries of male MBS graduates from Carnegie Mellon were on average $4,000 higher than female graduates. The reason? 57% of the men had negotiated what was being offered, compared with only 7% of the women. Decision makers need to know who you are, what you want, and why you should be the one to get it. 5. Let no one, not even the president, play you small, former Prime Minister of Australia said, quote, nothing big was ever achieved by cowering, unquote. In every interaction, you are teaching people how you want to be treated. Do not tolerate anything less than being treated with respect. 6. Lay your pride on the line. Maria Eitel, founder and co-chair of the Nike Foundation, shared, quote, coming from a position of fear of not succeeding, losing your job, or not being admired handicaps the potential of your career. I have never let fear of losing my job keep me from doing something I knew was the right thing to do. Unquote. Risking failure, criticism, rejection, and job loss can be scary and emotionally uncomfortable. Yet, you cannot build your leadership competence capacity or confidence unless you do. Her article finishes with this, quote, never has there been such a clarion call to action for women around the globe to refuse to cower and start owning the power that resides within each of us to effect change. Only then can the millions of women who have little of the education or opportunity we can so easily take for granted ever exercise theirs. So it's not just our responsibility as educated women to be braver in how we live and lead, it's our obligation. Who's with me? We will be braver together than we can ever be alone. Unquote.
The cause of equal and human rights will reap what is sown. November 18 through November 21, 1977. What will you reap? What will you sow?
And that is Barbara Jordan in the 1977 Women's Conference. All right, it's that time. Thank you for listening. You can find my show on crabdiving.com, crabdiving.com. That's one word, under the K-Voice tab. Or download my show as a podcast, wherever you get your podcast. Pick a podcast streaming service. I'll probably be there. Catch Ryan Pfeiffer and Patrick Vial for all your progressive news 5 days a week on the Crab Diving Podcast. And you can also find my show on Citizen Truth at citizentruth.org. Follow me on Twitter at Kelly the Voice, and of course on Facebook at K-Voice of Resistance. Follow my page! I need the friends. Okay, take care of yourselves out there. And as always, resist.
Resist!
Now is the time for all of us to stand up and say enough is enough. This has got to stop right now.